heteroscedasticity consistent or robust standard errors and their extension cluster robust standard errors are quite common in empirical work. Heteroscedasticity consistent or robust standard errors and their extension cluster robust standard errors are quite common in empirical work. While most researchers probably just apply these by heteroscedasticity consistent or robust standard errors are quite common in empirical research. Also, their extension cluster robust standard errors see some use. These techniques are very easy to use because they are typically programmed in your statistical software and you just switch on the options for using these alternative standard errors. So while you don't need to understand the math behind this alternative computational approach, heteroscedasticity consistent or robust standard errors are quite common in empirical work. The cluster robust standard errors extend the heteroscedasticity consistent standard errors and they also see some use. The use of these techniques is fairly simple. You just choose to use these errors instead of the standard. Heteroscedasticity consistent standard errors or robust standard errors are quite common in empirical work. Their extension is cluster robust standard errors, which takes care of the non-independence of the observations. These techniques are fairly simple to use because they have been programmed into many commonly available statistical software. And if your software supports these standard errors, their use is simply a matter of switching them on. And you don't need to really understand the math behind how the standard errors are calculated. But in this particular case, going through the math behind these two types of standard errors allows us to learn something about what these standard errors do, what they are capable of, what are their limitations, and also in the case of cluster robust standard errors, looking at the equation allows us to learn something new about when clustering of observations would be a problem and when not. So in this video, I will walk you through how the heteroscedasticity robust standard errors are derived and how the cluster robust standard errors are derived and where do we actually make the heteroscedasticity and the independence of observations assumptions in regression analysis and what those assumptions actually mean for the calculations. Let's start with heteroscedasticity. So the idea of heteroscedasticity was that if we have a predictor here on the x-axis, and then we have a regression line, the population regression line, and then we have the error term, which is the variation of the observations around the regression line, then the variance of the error term is not constant. So the idea is that in some parts of the regression line, there is less variation than in other parts like here. So the variance here basically varies as x varies. The homoscedasticity assumption was that this variance around the regression line is constant so that the observations don't spread out and don't become closer to the regression line here. Of course, you can have many other shapes of heteroscedasticity beyond this simple funnel shape. And this was the fifth assumption in regression analysis, and it was required for consistent estimation of the standard errors. If there is a lack of homoscedasticity, or if there's heteroscedasticity in your data, then your conventional standard error equation will produce incorrect results. So let's take a look at why heteroscedasticity causes problems for the conventional standard errors. So the conventional standard errors are calculated using this equation. this is the variance of the estimates. So we have the sigma here, and this is simply the variance of the error term. We replace the variance of the error term with the variance of the residuals, which is the estimate of the variance of the error term, and then we divide it by sum of squares total x, and which is just the sum of squares of x minus the mean of x. So how much x varies around its mean multiplied by sample size. And that gives us an estimate of the standard error of regression coefficient in the simple regression case. So let's take a look at first where this simple equation comes from and why we need the homoscedasticity assumption. If the homoscedasticity assumption fails, then we have this alternative formula, which can be found in many econometrics textbooks, where you take the residuals and then you multiply squared residuals with the square differences of the observations from their means, and then you take a sum and you divide by sum of squares total x to the second power, and that gives you the heteroscedasticity robust standard errors. So let's take a look at why this works and this doesn't under heteroscedasticity. So we need to start by looking at what is the variance of the regression coefficients, and we derive this variance formula on this slide. And I will take a couple of shortcuts. You can get the full derivation in your favorite econometrics book, and I'll just take a few shortcuts to make it fit in one slide. And we will derive one particularly useful form of this equation. So let's start with the covariance of x and y divided by variance of x, which is the simple regression coefficient estimated by OSF. We can write out the covariance and the variance equations. So the covariance is simply how much an observation minus its mean multiplied by an observation, another variable minus its mean. What is the average square of these two differences? So we work with differences from the mean. We multiply two differences from the mean, and then we take the average. We divide by n minus 1, which is an unbiased estimator for our covariance. Then we have the variance, which is simply the covariance of the observation with itself. And this can be simplified by eliminating the n minus 1, because it appears in both the numerator and the denominator. And we can further simplify by writing this as squares. So we have these sum of squares from mean. So this is basically a sum of squares residuals from a regression equation that only has an intercept. So this is the sum of squares total x, which is the sum of squares of the null model if we just regress x on and use only an intercept. And we write it as sum of squares total x. So we take differences from the mean, we square those differences and we take a sum that is the sum of squares total, and we do that for the variable x. So let's move on, and we can take this equation here, this upper part, and we can separate it. So we can write it out as x minus x bar times y1 and multiplied by x minus x bar times y bar. Y bar is simply the mean of y. Turns out that this here is actually zero, so we can take it out, and we have x minus its mean multiplied by y divided by sum of squares total x. Y, of course, is our dependent variable, and it can be written as a function of the population regression model. So y is beta 0 plus beta 1 x plus the error term, as the model defines. And we can further simplify this equation by splitting it into two. The beta zero is constant, and it will be eliminated because this is has a mean of zero. And then we have this two parts here, this sum. We have the beta one times x minus x bar times xi, and turns out that is the same as sum of squares total x. And this gives us a convenient formula. So the estimate of beta is beta 1 plus this thing here. So to understand how much the beta hat or the estimate of beta varies, we need to understand how much this varies here because this regression coefficient beta in the population, that's a known, that's a fixed value, it doesn't vary. So only thing that varies here is this part, and how much it varies is what our standard error quantifies. So we are now we start looking at the deriving the standard error. So how do we actually estimate how much this thing here varies? And we've write out the variation here. So variation of beta is variation of this sum, and we can drop the beta one out because it doesn't vary. It's a population quantity. It's fixed, and in regression analysis, without going into details, we treat the x variables as fixed too. So sum of squares totals x is fixed, and we can that's constant in our equation. And when we have variance of constant times something, then let's say that we have constant times x and we want to take the variance of that, then that is constant squared times the variance of x. So if you remember path analysis tracing rules, when you calculate the variance of something, you always go to the source and come back, which means that you take squares. We take squares as here as well. So we have sum of squares total x to the second power dividing this variance of x minus x bar or difference of x from its mean multiplied by the error term. And we can further simplify this by taking this variance and moving the sum outside the variance function. So the variance of the sum of independent variables is the sum of their variances. So that's the idea here. And this equation now, we can still make it a bit simpler because this variance of x minus x bar, this x minus x bar is fixed value. So it's fixed because x is fixed. We can move it outside the variance function. So it's x minus its mean to the second power multiplied by variance of the error term for one particular observation. And now at this point, we have to make the homoscedasticity assumption. So this far, we haven't made any assumptions that this variance of ui would be constant. If we assume that the variance of ui is constant, it doesn't vary as a function of x or anything, then we can actually take this variance of u and move it, replace it, and move it outside the sum function. So we have the variance of u, which is the variance of error term, multiplied by this thing here, which is simply the sum of squares total. And we have sum of squares total to the second power here, and that gives us the variance of error term divided by sum of squares total. And this variance of the error term is estimated with the variance of the residuals. So that's the normal conventional standard errors. You can find this derivation in your favorite econometrics book, if the book is any good, and they may explain a few more steps in why, like why some terms were zero. I just stated that they were zero without explanation. So what if we have heteroscedasticity? What if we can't make the homoscedasticity assumption that they require from moving from this line to this line? So what do we do about it? And let's take a look. So the idea here is that we can't move this variance of ui outside the sum because it's not constant. We can move it if it's constant because sum of different elements multiplied by the same constant is the same as that constant multiplying the sum of those elements. If ui is different for each observation, we of course can move it out. So how do we deal with this problem? We deal with this problem by actually replacing the ui here, the variance of ui, with the squared residual for that observation. So the idea was that variance is the mean of square differences from the mean. We know that the residuals have a mean of zero, and the error term has a mean of zero as well. So we can estimate the variance for each observation separately by using the squared residual. So we take this kind of equation, and that's our heteroscedasticity consistent standard errors. So this heteroscedasticity consistent standard error can also be used for regression with multiple predictor variables. In that case, we use matrix equations, and the equation looks like that. These are called Eicher, Huber, or White standard errors, or a combination of these names, based on statisticians who have discussed and introduced these concepts to the literature. This is also called a sandwich estimator, because we have this X matrix here, and we have the other X matrix here, and then this residual squared multiplied by the observation pair squared. Observation squared is sandwiched between these two other matrices. So it's called sandwich estimator for that reason. So you can see that there is this is sum of squares total, and this is sum of squares total, because in matrices, when you multiply two things together, the order matters. For that reason, we have one on the left side, one on the other side, instead of multiplying it twice. The minus one is inverse, which is basically the same as our equivalent to taking dividing something one by something, so you create an inverse. And otherwise, it looks the same, so we take residual squared, we have observation squared, and then we multiply by sum of squares total. So the matrices are something that are useful if you want to study this technique yourself, but as a normal researcher, you don't really have to know how to read all that stuff. So the question now is that if these don't assume that there's homoscedasticity, they are more general because they also work under any heterogeneity or heteroscedasticity, then when should we use this, and why not always use heteroscedasticity consistent standard errors? The thing is that heteroscedasticity consistent standard errors have been proven to work in large samples, and there is some evidence that their performance may not be that good when the sample size is very small. So in practice, if you have large samples, several hundreds or thousands, then using heteroscedasticity robust SCs as a standard practice is probably not a bad idea. If you work on small samples, like you have experimental data, you have just maybe 40 people in each experimental group, then you may be better off using the normal standard errors, even if there is slight heteroscedasticity in your data. The reason why these don't work as well in small samples is that this residual squared here is not a good estimator for the particular variance of the error term in small samples. So this gets better and better as the sample size increases. So heteroscedasticity robust standard errors allow you to deal with heteroscedasticity, and way you use them is that you simply turn them on. Understanding cluster robust standard errors is something that allows you to understand the effects of clustering. So let's take a look at the cluster standard errors. So the idea of heteroscedasticity robust standard errors was, in matrix form, that you take the residual of one observation and you square it. In cluster robust standard errors, you take two different residuals belonging to the same cluster, and you multiply them together, and you repeat that for every observation in the same cluster. And why would you want to do that? And what's the point? And what does this equation, or analyzing this equation, tell us about the effects of clustering on normal regression model? Let's take a look at this particular part here, and why do we have two different residuals? So here we have one residual, here we have two different residuals. Of course, we could have the same residual, but we basically multiply every pair of residuals together. So let's take a look at this derivation of heteroscedasticity consistent standard errors. So that's the heteroscedasticity, or that's the normal standard errors. We make the heteroscedasticity assumption here, and we actually have to make the independence of observations assumption a bit before, so it's here. So why do we need the independence of observations here? The reason is that when we take a sum of these differences from the mean multiplied by the error term, the sum of these, the variance of this sum is the sum of these variances only if the observations are independent. So if you take two variables, the variance of the sum is the sum of variances only if those two variables are uncorrelated or independent. So what do we do when that fails? So we can't move from here and then move this sum outside the variance. We can't do that because of non-independence of observations. What we actually do here in the cluster robust standard errors is that we calculate this variance. It is actually a sum of variances plus all the sum of all covariances in the cluster. So if we have 10 observations, then the variance is, and we have 45 covariances, 10 variances, and the variance here, variance of the sum, is the sum of those 10 covariances plus 2 times the 45 covariances, or we can just use each covariance twice in the sum. So we take a look at this covariance between the observations in the cluster. That covariance can be from multiple different sources. It can be from unobserved heterogeneity, so some clusters are on average higher than others, and there's no particular pattern. In panel data, this can be autocorrelation. So it can be that observations close to each other in time are more similar to observations to one another than observations that are far apart on time. And what we do is that we take this ui and uj, the error terms for two different observations, we replace those with the residuals, we reorganize a bit. So covariance between these two products is, because the means are zeros, is simply whatever is the product of all these things multiplied together. So that's our heteroscedasticity consistent standard errors, and that's the equation in matrix form. Looking at this equation and looking at the variance equation for the regression coefficient in clustered with cluster data allows us to learn something about the effects of clustering. So let's take a look at these two equations. So this is the variance formula. If we know the variance or the covariance between two observations in the same cluster in the population, we know we know the sum of squares total, then we can calculate how much the regression coefficients are estimated from repeated samples from that population would vary from one sample to another. And this is the equation that we use to estimate that variance. So this is an estimate of variance or standard error, and this is the actual variance if we know these values. So let's take a look at that part first. So what does that tell us? We can use a little bit of covariance algebra, and let's write it down. And I'm going to use D for x minus mean of x. So we just work with difference scores. And the difference score for I and the ui, covariance with a difference score of j and uj, is simply whatever is the expected value of the product of all these things minus the means of these two terms here. Well, the means are simply zero, so this is eliminated here. And the covariance is simply whatever is the expected value or the mean if we multiply all these four things, the two error terms and two deviations of x from the mean together, and then we take a sum, and then we divide by the number. So we take it, multiply, calculate this quantity for each observation, take a mean. And because the error terms are assumed to be uncorrelated with the predictor, so that's the no endogeneity assumption, this equation can be separated. So it's what is the expected value of these two errors, these two deviations from the mean of x, and these two error terms, which is the same as covariance between two predictors multiplied by covariance between two error terms. And this equation actually gives us some insights that are demonstrated in another video with a simulation using simulated dataset. The thing here is that if two observations are independent, so if ICC1 of x is zero, then this term here will be zero, and so whatever the correlation between the two error terms is doesn't matter. So if your x variables are independent of one another, there's no clustering effect, no other correlation, no anything in the x variables, then it turns out that non-independence of the error term is actually not the problem for your analysis, which is kind of an interesting result. It's not probably very practical, but it explains why in another video we can't get clustering effects if we just manipulate the ICC of one variable but not the other. If we look at the actual equation that we use for calculating the standard error, we can look at this part here. So because we multiply two residuals together and we do that separately for each pair within a cluster, and we do that for each cluster independently, this implies that the cluster robust standard errors are valid regardless of how the observations, the error terms are correlated. So there can be a strong autocorrelation for some cluster, no autocorrelation for other cluster, and these standard errors don't care because we don't make any assumptions about any covariances. We estimate every covariance within cluster by taking multiplying two residuals together. So this is robust for arbitrary within cluster error correlations. Most traditional techniques for panel data particularly focus on unobserved heterogeneity, and unobserved heterogeneity manifests in error terms that are correlated within cluster, but that correlation is constant. So there is no, in normal traditional panel data model, there is no effect that two observations that are closer to one another are more similar than two observations that are farther from each other. So that would be an require a model for autocorrelation. So this cluster robust standard errors, in contrast to, for example, GLS fixed effects and GLS random effects, also allows you to have other correlation structures beyond the basic structure where each observation is correlated at the same level with any other observation. So it's more robust, and that's one reason why when you work with panel data, you should always consider using cluster robust standard errors, even if you applied already an estimation technique that took unobserved heterogeneity into account. The second point that we learn from here is that when we have two residuals that we multiply together here, then that is a poor estimator of the actual covariance unless our sample size gets large. So if the number of clusters is small, then the standard errors are typically small too, typically biased. And this is a problem that you can't solve by increasing the number of observations within clusters. So the idea is that if you have let's say you have 30 companies that you follow, and you follow them for 10 years, so you have 300 observations, you could be concerned that your cluster robust standard errors are slightly biased because of the small number of clusters. Then increasing the number of observations within cluster from 10 to 20 to increase the total sample size to 600 wouldn't do anything for the potential bias. So this depends on whether this is accurate or not, depends on the number of clusters and what is sufficient. It's difficult to say. For example, Angrist here, you says that, well, maybe 40 would be like a minimum limit. So if you have observation number of clusters below 40, then you could be in trouble. If you have more than 40, then you could be fine. But this, of course, depends on many different things, so we can't just set a one cutoff that would be useful in all scenarios, but that gives you a ballpark estimate of what kind of numbers of clusters are needed for this technique to be really useful. So this video went through some of the math to show some insights about how clustering works, how it affects the variance of regression coefficients. And the key takeaways here is that these techniques are useful, but they require large sample sizes. If you want to apply these techniques, you don't actually have to understand much of the math here, because these are typically applied by just switching them on in software that supports them.